Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfil those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
He's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh!
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special The Transfer Window Has Slammed Shut podcast. What should we, what do we feel about Tottenham's business during the summer? How is that going to translate into the next few months until we can all start talking about another transfer window opening on January the 1st? I am Marcus Buckland. Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard is here. Tom Parkley of The Sun is here. Tom Allnut of The Times is here. So we're all here. Are we all going to agree and adhere to Tottenham's business plan during the course of the summer? I'm looking at my little list. There are a lot more outs than ins. And of the ins, we have already seen Odegaard. We've seen that he can't finish, but I think he's got a lot more beside him. We've seen Werner, but we haven't seen him. Apparently he was on the pitch for a few minutes the other day, but I'm not quite sure why. We have sort of seen Solanke, the man who was not injured through the whole of last season, managed one game in Tottenham colours before being sidelined, and what a miss that's already proving to be. And we've seen flickers from young Bergvall with a wonderful blonde mane, much more than that. And Archie Gray, who, if you listen to any Leeds fan, is absolutely thrilled that, distraught that he's gone. But I'm starting to wonder whether it's a double bluff, and secretly they are thrilled because he's not been given a chance to make a mark yet. Lots have gone out. So, Dan, how do we sum up in sort of 60 succinct seconds, if you can keep it to that, Tottenham's transfer policy during the summer?
Typically upbeat and positive introduction there, Marcus. So I'll try and be succinct because there's a lot to get into. I think, generally speaking, Spurs have signed a great fit for what Postecoglou wants to do in Solanke. We've talked about this before, but off the ball, he ticks all the boxes. He's a great presser. He works really hard. He can hold it up. He looks like he's going to be the finisher that Spurs so desperately need. And we saw that in Newcastle. And I've actually written a piece today with the Standard saying how he's only played one game and been at Spurs for 3 weeks, but he already feels crucial to their hopes of kicking on this season because they so clearly need a kind of reliable centre forward in there. So I think he's been a very smart signing. And then they've signed three teenagers who I think look really promising. I mean, Gray and Bergvall in particular, I think are just really, really exciting players. I kind of can't wait to see more of, especially Bergvall, I have to say. I just think he's going to be the kind of player who just, he just looks like a natural, doesn't he? And I think he's going to be hard to keep out of the team long term. I think there are some glaring, not so much weaknesses, but kind of areas where the squad looks thin, notably goalkeeper and left back. And I think this is a point I've made a few times now, but this feels like a transfer window where Spurs are taking a medium-term view. It doesn't feel like a transfer window where they're saying, we're going to try and win the title this year or try and compete on multiple fronts. It feels like they're building a squad maybe 2 or 3 years down the road. And these three really exciting teenagers are going to be part of a kind of great Spurs team in 2 or 3 years' time, along with Mikey Moore and obviously lots of others who are already in the first team. So that's my overall assessment. I understand that's frustrating for fans, but I think that's really what Spurs are doing.
And I would concur with that. Tom A, do you think Spurs fans should sit patiently, accept that this is another long-term rebuild, that, you know, it's asking too much to expect Postecoglou and co. to produce a championship-winning team this season? Or if you are a Spurs fan, are you going, I have heard this so many times, there seems to be a slight lack of coherency, as Dan's mentioned, there are positions that have not been filled. You know, and I know you don't get a lot of sanity from football fans, we all tend to shoot from the hip, but if you can put that very calm, assured hat of yours on, how do you feel Spurs supporters should be reacting to the current situation?
Hi, Marcus. Good to be back after a long break. Things feel kind of similar to when I left, I've got to say, like same sort of vibes. To be honest, I can understand the frustrations that some Spurs fans have, I have to say. I do think, you know, this has been a good window in the sense of bringing in, you know, promising young players. I think Spurs have made their squad better. I don't think you can deny that whatsoever. And I think even in the first two or three games, you can see on the substitutes bench, for example, you know, what they can bring on now, how they can change games. You know, there's real competition for places in midfield and up front. You know, it's now not as easy as it was last season to predict Postecoglou's first 11. And in games, in second half, you can look down that substitutes bench and say, look, they can bring on three or four players, attacking players who can possibly change the game in some way. My question mark is, have they really improved the starting lineup? And I'm not sure they have. You know, I think so far, you look at the first two or three games, and Solanke aside, I'm not looking at starting 11 and thinking Spurs are significantly better than last season. So a lot hinges on Solanke. You know, if Solanke turns out to be a kind of 20-goal, 25-goal a season player, and he steps up and becomes, you know, England's number two behind Kane, which he could do. You know, there's a lot of upside with Solanke. There's no doubt about that. And he has shown over the last few years that he's also reliable. You know, in terms of his injury record, I know that Spurs put a lot of stall on the fact that here is a player who basically plays week in, week out. Now, that feels a little bit ironic now, given he's, you know, picked up an injury in the first couple of weeks. But, you know, there is a lot of upside to Solanke. The problem is, I think aside from Solanke, I don't think they have addressed some pretty key areas where I felt like to get into the kind of top three of this division this season, Tottenham needed to make some statement signings. I don't think they did that. So I think it's a 6 out of 10 window for me. You know, made three or four good signings, and of course it will depend a lot on what, you know, what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years' time. If Archie Gray becomes, you know, the next Paul Scholes or whatever it is, then, you know, brilliant. We'll look back on this window and say it was a transformative window. But in terms of immediate upside for Tottenham, I don't think many people outside Spurs are looking at this team and thinking they can break the City, Arsenal hold, get into that top three ahead of Liverpool. They're very much still in that kind of top four conversation, in my opinion, when you look at that starting lineup.
I guess just to come back on that, do you, Tom, feel that there were positions in the best 11 that Postecoglou can put out that really needed to be upgraded on? Because I kind of look at Spurs and think, what they needed to raise was this floor of the squad, not necessarily the ceiling, because I felt like their first 11 on paper, even at the start of last season, was pretty strong, barring possibly, I suppose, number six and maybe one winger. So, I mean, I just wondered where you thought they could kind of have gone out and genuinely improve the 11.
I think those are the two positions, you know, that you mentioned. You know, essentially, I think to be playing the same midfield, Madison, Saar, Bissouma, in my opinion, feels like a misstep is the word, but I think it's slightly overlooking a big problem they had last year. You know, to still be keeping faith with Bissouma, and as a separate conversation, to me feels optimistic. You know, maybe that's a generous word. And I think in the front three, when we look at Spurs last season, and I think, you know, of course it's a very small sample size, but on the basis of the first three games, we're talking about what is the difference right now between this Tottenham team and the Liverpool team we saw yesterday, for example. The difference is they haven't got Salah. You know, lots of teams don't. But they also haven't got Luis Diaz, Jota, for example, these really high-end options. Tottenham have got Son. You know, they've got Sonny, who, you know, every season now is a question mark. Is he going to be the same Son as he was last season? And at some point, Son is going to come into his declining years. You know, and this could be that year. They're relying on players like Johnson, Werner, Odegaard now, you know, Solanke, who we don't, you know, they're asterisks. We don't know, you know, are they going to, you know, go up two or three levels? And that's Postecoglou's job. And maybe he's going to transform these players. But if Spurs had signed a really elite, you know, left winger, right winger, who can go in and score 15 goals, and okay, they're not easy to find, and they're certainly not cheap, you know, in the market. You're probably going to have to spend 60, 70, 80 million on them. You are. But if Spurs want to be a top two or three team in this league, ultimately, that's the price. You know, look at Manchester United, the money they're throwing around, and people will say, okay, it's not good money, and it's not. But these are the players you have to, if you want to go and make difference to the game changers to your team up front and the front three, then that's the kind of money you have to pay. And I think Spurs, I think they just shied away from that a little bit. You know, we know, for example, they were very interested in Eze. We know they absolutely really thought Eze was a real top target this summer. And for whatever reason, the 60 million, the way that Palace wanted the fee paid, the way they wanted it up front, all this kind of thing, Spurs thought that they didn't want to do the deal. I think a big team who really wants to think they can challenge for the title this season would have made a bit more of a statement of intent than what they did in the window.
Tom B, if I can bring you in on this, you know, there's a really good point that Tom A has made. I guess what you could argue is, yeah, you spend 60, 70 million on Eze. You know, he's injury prone. Who knows what you're going to get from him? If you really trust your scouting system and believe that you know what you are buying, then the likes of Odegaard and Gray down the line, and Solanke's a bit of a risk, of course, at 60 million or whatever, but you trust your scouting system, you buy for the future, as Dan has said, you have to give it a year or so, but then you might be in a fantastic position. And then equally, I read, understand there'll be lots of fans going, but why are we relying on championship players? So I see both arguments here, and I think a lot of it then comes down to how good have you been in that transfer market? If Archie Gray is as good as people say he is, then bring it on. If Odegaard is as good as some people say he is, then down the line, he might well prove to be a better purchase than Eze. But it's a gamble. It's another gamble at a club that's been trying to win silverware for such a long time. What's your take on it?
It's hard to disagree with quite a lot of what Dan and Tom have said already. I do agree. I think it's a gamble. I think Spurs are returning to the sort of comfort of where they've been in previous years after the Ndombele and Lo Celso big money experiments, which didn't pay off. They got their fingers burnt by that, and they've kind of gone back to what they know to a certain extent of buying young players, particularly British players, and hoping to improve them. And there is a lot of value in that. But the problem is, from a Tottenham fan point of view, and I see it from you, Marcus, and I see it from all my friends, you know, had a friend who went up to Newcastle the other day and got, you know, couldn't get back, and having to get taxi rides back from York for 550 quid. Like, there's so much money that's been put into it from a fan point of view over so many years with no trophies that the weight of expectation, the pressure has grown to such an extent that they just that trophy or that success has to happen now. And I just don't think Spurs, in the market that they're working in, that isn't going to happen. I mean, even Ange said himself when we were asked about him last season, like if Spurs would spend 100 million on a player, either he was buying into Spurs' sort of policy, or this is what he genuinely feels, that he'd rather have two £50 million players. That's just what they do. And they've done it again, and it might come off in the future, but that's the key word, might. I mean, even Solanke, who we've talked already about since he signed, about what a seemingly great fit he is. And I have a lot of confidence that he will be a good fit. But one thing we're overlooking when we're looking at all the, you know, the metrics of his pressing and his goals return last season is it's another level up. That doesn't mean that he will necessarily translate it at Tottenham, that he did at Bournemouth. I mean, I have confidence that he will, and maybe surpass it with the amount of chances they create. And as Dan pointed out, when you look at the Newcastle game, they were crying out for someone who could be a reliable finisher in the box, and he should be that. But even with him at 65 million, there's a question mark against him. And then you've got the same with all these other young talents who look very, very promising. But with the level of competition that's out there, particularly Arsenal, Man City, and the way Liverpool started under Slot, I don't really see, from what I've seen so far, enough to think that they can really definitely challenge for the title, and it's going to be a battle to finish in the top four. I guess the promising side of things is they have backed Ange's philosophy, albeit with younger players rather than, you know, 25-year-old players like Eze, who are sort of ready-made to go straight into it and perform at the top level, barring Solanke, of course. But they've shipped out the players that he didn't want. The change that he's talked about ever since he's come in has continued apace. And that's exciting if all fans are still on board with his way of playing, which I think they should be, even when there's frustrating elements to it, like we saw at Newcastle, like we saw at Leicester. When it's good, it's very, very good. And he's been backed with players who fit into that philosophy. I mean, you do think, like, if he were to leave, whoever came in next would have to be something similar, because the squad has been built for him, or is being built for him over the coming years. But to come back to my initial sort of reaction, it's just the jury's out on a lot of it. Maybe in a few years it really come to pass. And I do really agree with Dan's point that it feels like they're building for the post-Pep era.
I think looking at the three teenagers Spurs signed, I'm really excited about Bergvall. I think he's going to be a player that's going to be really hard to ignore or leave on the bench kind of long term, even if he's 18. He just looks like such a natural and such an exciting player. And I think Gray kind of made sense. You look at the kind of number six market out there, and I agree with Tom when I asked you that question earlier. I agree that number six and wing are the two positions in the first 11 that need upgrading, but you look at the market for them, and Liverpool tried to get one. They went after Zubimendi and they couldn't get him, and I think they thought there's no one really else we want and we can get, so there weren't many options out there. But I wonder if Odubel will be the one we'll look at and think that was really the position that Spurs needed to get someone in. But I get the Graham Bergvall signings, particularly as Bissouma on his day. We know it's a risk, but we know he can be fantastic and arguably world class on his day. But I look at Odubel and I think there's loads of promise there, and he might prove me wrong, but he does look raw. And I think Spurs already have a kind of raw wing who's developing in Johnson. They've already got Werner, who's a useful system player, but we know is inconsistent and blows hot and cold. They've already got Kulusevski, who's really versatile, but for different reasons kind of blows hot and cold. And yeah, I just agree with Tom A. I think they needed someone maybe in there to challenge kind of for a place in the front three with Son, who's going to deliver a bit more consistently. And maybe Odubel will be that guy, but he's 19. He's had kind of one season in the Premier League, and you wonder whether he's the one we'll be looking at and thinking, there's so much onus in the front three here. Ange Ball relies so much on attacking and outscoring the opposition because it will give up chances. And there's just too many players in the front three who are kind of still developing and for different reasons, not quite consistent enough.
So I just want to throw a name at you all, because he cropped up right at the end of the transfer window. And, you know, he's a devil in many ways because of who he's played for. But should we have jumped in and got Raheem Sterling right at the death rather than let him go to Arsenal, where no doubt he will prove to be an inspirational late signing and inspire them to the title? Is he not exactly the sort of player who would have fitted into Ange's system and is a complete player? I'd just love to get a yes or no from all three of you, starting with Tom B.
I can't give you a yes or no. I have to say it depends on which Raheem Sterling you're signing. I mean, I don't think anyone's expecting him to be the Man City player of, was it 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, when he was, I saw a stat the other day when he had sort of 53 goal contributions across the year. I mean, he's just not at that level anymore, but he could still be a really useful player playing in a team that has a sort of fixed philosophy. I mean, Chelsea's just a mess, hasn't it? It has been ever since he's been there. So I don't think that's helped. But when he has played, he hasn't really been anywhere near the levels he's shown before. So you can also see why they wanted to move him on. I mean, his wages would have been loads, but it seems like Chelsea are still picking up quite a lot of the tab. So I don't know. It really depends what kind of Sterling you're getting. I mean, but then when you think of the way Postecoglou plays with those cutbacks, I mean, he could fit into that quite well. And I can't agree more with both Tom and Dan about a wide forward just being so key. I mean, I asked Ange in the presser last season, you know, it feels like your two top big money signings up top, wide and up front, from really being able to compete. And he pushed back on it massively. But I still believe that, really. I mean, I know you need squad depth, but it is at the crux of it, those key difference makers that will be the difference for them this season. And I can't help agreeing with Dan on Odubel.
Well, the Sterling thing is interesting.
Yeah, Marcus, go on. Hang on, on this little cross section. So Barclays being a politician, he won't say yes or no, but we can still get two proper answers. All not?
I mean, no, I don't think so. No chance. I really think that Sterling is almost the antithesis of what Postecoglou is about when it comes to signings, you know, and actually also what Levy is about as well, to be honest, and what you know, the whole thing is now, you know, there to do. I mean, they're trying to bring in younger players with a big upside who have their kind of careers in front of them. You know, that is the, and I can understand that. You know, they want to bring in players who, Ange always talks about this thing of, you know, talking to players on the phone, and it's not about persuading them, it's about finding out about their motivations. And I think that is true. Like, if you're going to succeed at Spurs, if you're going to make Spurs win the league, you have to be the kind of player who kind of, you know, believes in fairy tales, who believes that their career is in front of them. They have everything to achieve. You know, they're not going to go and sign people like Sterling, who have already won countless league titles and FA Cups and done it all, you know, and see Spurs as a step down. I mean, in terms of technical, you know, pure footballer, yeah, I think Sterling kind of fits that mold. But in terms of, you know, wages, personality, and I'm not talking about Sterling's personality, I'm talking about his motivation there, you know, and what he has to achieve. It just doesn't fit, you know. And I think that there is a wider question there about Postecoglou, because, you know, we know he wants to kind of sign younger players who can be flexible and versatile and attacking and all these kind of things. But at some stage, you wonder, will he also need to kind of be slightly more flexible in that way? You know, will he actually have to also kind of, you know, all the top managers, all the top teams have to kind of handle big egos, have to handle big players, you know? And that doesn't mean about signing 31-year-olds and signing Perisic's, by the way. That's not the same thing as what Conte and Mourinho perhaps wanted. But there is a thing that if you want to be a kind of a real top team in the Premier League or in Europe, you have to handle these kind of big personalities and big egos, you know, and maybe Ange is more the kind of Pochettino mold where he wants to sign younger players who are going to kind of buy into his methods. And I do see that, you know, and I think the one thing we can say here is that, you know, when we're talking about the squad and not maybe signing those kind of statement players, it's up to Postecoglou in a way now to kind of make these players better players, you know, and when we talk about what Conte didn't do and what Mourinho didn't do, he didn't make these players that Spurs had better. Whereas Ange could turn Archie Gray, you know, into a world-class central midfielder. You know, he could turn Solanke into the next Harry Kane. You know, and if he does that, then completely fair play to him. You know, he's happy with these signings. They're bought for him. And, you know, it's not impossible that he gets a lot more out of them than we think, you know, he might. So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that Spurs aren't in the market for players like Sterling. And I'm not necessarily saying they should be. But I wonder if at some point he might just need to kind of be a little bit more flexible on the kind of players he's looking at.
Sancho would have interested me more, actually. I think I agree with Tom on Sterling. It just didn't feel like a good fit for the Spurs project. Sancho, he's a dribbly winger who can play on both sides, which is seemingly what the brief was with Odegaard. Someone who can beat a man in one-on-one situation, make something happen. Hasn't really ever done it in English football, but I think we all know what a talent he is. Anyone who watched the kind of Champions League semi-finals and final would testify how good a player he is, and United were kind of desperate to get rid of him in the same way that Chelsea were desperate to get rid of Sterling. So I agree on Sterling, but I wonder whether Spurs might have gone to him and thought, we'll stop him going to Chelsea if we can. But that's a kind of counterfactual now. We'll never know.
Okay, so in terms of those who've come in, Odegaard, of course, we've got to give him an opportunity, and he certainly sparkled on his debut. Couldn't finish for love nor money at Newcastle, but there's some talent there. Timo Werner, we just not talk about Timo anymore and hope that miraculously he suddenly shows us later this season that he's learnt to play in the way we want him to. And I like him, but so I'm just don't say anything more about him. Solanke, just get fit, start scoring goals. Bergvall, yeah, superb. And Archie Gray, I hope you boys are right and that Postecoglou is going to transform him into a world-class player, which I think is quite possible. And let us not forget another winger is going to be arriving in January. Yong Min Hyuk. I hope I've got that more or less right. So that's something to look forward to. Just in terms of the players who've gone, there are so many of them. I'll rattle through the names. Apologies if I've missed one out, but we've said goodbye to Rodon, to Lo Celso, to Emerson Royal, to Ndombele, the 25th time of asking, to Højbjerg. Gosh, three of the four of us really miss that man. I'd love to know how he's getting on at the start of this season, actually. Oliver Skip, you know, he went with everyone's blessings. Solomon, of course, just didn't happen for him. Parrott's gone. Valise is on loan. Tanganga's gone. Sessignon's gone. Phillips is out on loan. I mean, we could throw Dyer and Perisic into the mix if you look at all the players that have gone over the past 12 months or so. Dan, Does this represent good business? Have Spurs done an essential thing here and got rid of, quotes, a lot of the dead wood that's been floating around the stadium for a few years now?
Yeah, I think they really have done a good job on this, for sure. I mean, one of Spurs' biggest problems really over the last 10 years, going way back to Pochettino's calls to refresh the squad, was just being bad at selling players or being bad at getting rid of players. They don't tend to sell players at the right time, and they struggle to offload the bad signings. They have, for example, they've never been able to kind of capitalize on the Saudi boom in the way that other clubs like Chelsea have, to kind of offload players. And this summer, they've managed to get almost all of the unwanted players, I think with the exception, as we speak, of Reguilon, who's still on the books, out the door. And in many cases, for decent enough money. So I think that's really important. I mean, Tom B will be able to speak to this more, but I think Newcastle, for example, you look at them, they've been desperate to spend this summer. They haven't been able to get their top targets. And part of the reason is they can't sell their unwanted players. They've got a lot of players who are out of contract in a year and no one wants to buy them. And Spurs have had that problem in the past as well. They certainly, summer 2018, when they signed no one, they were desperately trying to sell Moussa Dembele and Danny Rose and Toby Alderweireld, and they got no acceptable bids. The players weren't really desperate to go and reduce their salary and play somewhere undesirable, and so they stayed. And Spurs couldn't refresh the squad. So selling players is not as fun as signing players, but it is really important. And I think we could look back on this summer as not necessarily transformational in terms of the incomings, but a really important kind of cleanse and a really important sort of stepping stone in Postecoglou's rebuild. Because he's managed to just clear the decks and make room for players he wants. And I think that there was a very telling comment he made in his press conference on Friday. It was pointed out to him that he started last season with three centre-backs in Romero, Van de Ven and Dier. And he starts this season with three first-choice centre-backs, really, Romero, Van de Ven and Dragosin. And it was put to him that isn't the situation quite similar? And he said, no, it's completely different. Dragosin gives us a different dimension. And I think what he means is I've got a player who I trust and actually want to play now, with the greatest respect to Dier. And I think that's true kind of throughout the squad. He didn't really want to play Skip. And now he has Gray, who he does want to play. He didn't really want to play Lo Celso. And now he has Bergvall, who he does want to play. So there's more depth in that there are more kind of Angie-type players. It's a more of an Ange ball squad, and that's important, even if the numbers kind of aren't significantly changed.
Tom, if I can just jump in, before you give us maybe the Newcastle analogy, the one thing that has struck me with that list of players that have gone for different reasons, and we've been speaking earlier about how we need to trust those coming in. We've got to believe in the scouting system that the Odegaard is going to prove to be worth his weight in gold, and Solanke, et cetera, et cetera. But you look at some of those names, some of them have been at the club for a long time. But, Rodon, Lo Celso, Ndombele. I'm not going to include Højbjerg in this list because I think he did a really good job. And likewise, Skip, who came through the ranks. Solomon, okay, unlucky injury problems, etc. Valise in and out in about as much time as it takes to turn on a light bulb. Tanganga, okay, homegrown, can't necessarily blame the club for that. Sessegnon. I mean, this points, I have to say, to a lot of very, very bad business, dare I go that far. And so when we're talking about needing to trust for the next building session, it's easy to understand why Spurs fans get frustrated, because some of those players cost an awful lot of money as well. And now, as Dan is rightly saying, we're getting them out the door in whatever way we can. How does this point to the way Spurs are continuing to run themselves as a club, Tomby?
Well, I suppose, why do you think they've changed so many people behind the scenes over the last couple of years since Ange's come in? They've gone for a whole new approach to all these things. Like I said before, had their fingers burnt, particularly with Ndombele and Lo Celso and how much money they cost, and it's been costing them ever since. They're going a different direction. Johan Lange has got a whole, a different way of working. A lot of it's more sort of statistical based. They'll hope for a different way. I mean, with Ryan Sessegnon, there's quite a lot of, you have to go through them individually, but people like Sessegnon, the injuries really started to add up at Spurs. It's not like, I don't think he didn't have injuries at Fulham before, but I'm not sure people could have sort of quite foreseen to have so many problems as he did at Tottenham. So whether that's bad luck or bad scouting is sort of really your call. But you know, back to the Newcastle thing. I mean, one positive from Tottenham's point of view is what's been frustrating for Newcastle fans, apart from not being able to sign Mark Guéhi and bring in, you know, a big name signing, because that it feels like that's where Newcastle are at, because their squad's not in bad shape. They just feel like they need to add one or two, you know, top players every window to keep progressing. That's where they feel they've gone backwards. But what Newcastle had the issue with, and Dan alluded to it earlier, they couldn't sell the likes of Miguel Almiron. So they ended up having to sell Elliot Anderson, a very promising young, you know, homegrown talent, to Nottingham Forest for big money. But he's a player that Eddie Howe was very excited about. And Minter, who's never played a game for the club, but had such a good loan spell last season that Howe wanted, you know, him involved in the squad. And he was a very exciting, promising young winger who's already, you know, setting the world alight or playing impressively at Brighton. So at least Tottenham weren't in that position in the age of PSR where they were having to sell players they didn't want to sell just to, you know, to comply with the rules. So that's a positive. But on the flip side, because they were in pretty good shape financially, it did. I mean, I'm not privy to obviously to exactly how the balance sheet worked out, but it did feel like, you know, come back to it, that winger position in particular. I mean, maybe we'll be wrong about Odegaard, but it just feels with the way Ange plays, and I know we're repeating ourselves here, but that could have been so key, and they haven't gone big in the way that Tottenham go big. I'm not talking about a £100 million player, but a sort of equivalent of Solanke out wide, and it comes back to the sort of we'll see and fingers crossed from a Spurs point of view. But at least they weren't in that position that Newcastle found themselves in.
Yeah, well, good news in that regard. Seeing as Newcastle nicked 3 points off us, we want to get something back from them. Just in, you know, so this season, I swore to Dan yesterday, actually, I said, I'm not going to talk about top four, trying to win the league. I don't think it's going to happen. For me, with this squad, this unpredictable group of youngsters who on their day can beat anybody, but can also go and lose at Sheffield United in the fifth round of the FA Cup as well, a big cut run is absolutely essential. Otherwise, Tommy, nothing seems to change for me. And I want a trophy more than anybody else, but I think this is a really important few months now to just say, right, this is what we've got. Forget what went before. Who knows what might come in the future. We have got to back and have patience with this team.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it surprises me in a way how much negativity there is. And I do think sometimes, you know, obviously social media is not a great gauge sometimes of what fans actually think. I think a lot of Spurs fans, sensible Spurs fans, realise that this is still a sort of, you know, project that is very much in its early stages. You know, it's been 1 year. This is the second season, and let's see, it's still very early in this season as well. You know, I heard what Dan said the other day about August football. You know, I really agree with that. You know, at this point, players still coming back from the summer, international breaks, disrupting things, new signings, settling in. I don't think we're going to get a real feel for where this Tottenham team are at for another few weeks yet. You know, and after three games, okay, it's been a fairly underwhelming start, I would say. Not a disastrous start, but, you know, slightly disappointing. I can see why fans are slightly wondering where the progress is, but it's still early. And I also think it's worth just kind of zooming out here on the game in general, because actually, yes, Tottenham fans might be frustrated. And I think we've said why we kind of agree with some of those frustrations. But equally, Solanke was probably, you know, the big signing of the summer in terms of the Premier League, was he? I mean, I guess you could say Sterling, maybe, in terms of the name, but actually in terms of the money, and I don't know if anyone really made a bigger signing than Tottenham signing Solanke for 60 million. This was a really quiet summer transfer window in general for the game. You know, Liverpool barely made a signing, did they? I mean, you know, we're looking at Newcastle, hardly made a signing. Manchester City made two signings, Arsenal maybe two or three. You know, the big clubs all around Europe were all struggling to do big deals. And there's a few reasons for that. Saudi Arabia were nowhere near as free spending as they were last year. You know, they've got more sensible, they've got smarter, they're looking for younger players. So a lot of the players, and that was relevant to Spurs, by the way, because there were one or two players that Tottenham were, I wouldn't say keen, but ready to shift if they got right offers in. You know, Richarlison, we know, is one of them. Bissouma, I think, was another one. If they got big offer from big clubs, they would have sold, you know, and they didn't get those big offers. And perhaps the club would say, you know, behind the scenes, if we got big money for some of those players, then we would have been able to spend the big money on the big players that we're talking about. There's also a huge thing at the moment in terms of broadcast deals. Nobody expects the Premier League broadcast deal to be bigger than the last one. For example, the PSR is obviously putting huge pressure on clubs at the moment in the Premier League and other financial rules, European rules on clubs all over Europe. There is not as much money circling around the transfer market in Europe as there has been over the last few years. And the Premier League clubs are feeling the pinch, you know, all the way through. So it's not just Spurs. You know, if we look at it in terms of the Spurs bubble, yes, it looks like they haven't necessarily, you know, made any huge statements of intent here. But I think a lot of fans at other clubs would be saying similar things, to be honest. And the idea that after, you know, one season where they finished fifth, played some great football, had some really great performances. OK, there were lots of ups and downs and it didn't finish quite so well. The idea that people are already wondering about the Postecoglou, you know, direction, in my opinion, is completely nonsensical. You know, Spurs are in a good place. They're in a good position. They've got a good squad. Are they going to challenge and win for the league? I don't think so. If they do, then Postecoglou would have done an incredible job, and maybe he will do an incredible job. But they're right there in terms of the top four, and they've got a good squad that can challenge for the next couple of years to come.
One thing I would say, based on your question, Marcus, which was kind of suggested, you know, that everyone needs to stick behind Ange, which I totally agree with, and Tom B's point that the club is kind of signing Ange players. I actually don't really see it like that. I think one good thing about Ange's project and then the kind of players he likes is that pretty much any progressive manager would like to work with these kind of players. They're all technical. They're all good off the ball. They can press. They're all young. And that means you're not kind of signing players like, say, Perisic, who was very specific to Conte, who was kind of a specialist in this system that Conte liked and was obviously kind of older and, you know, only suited certain managers. You know, you are actually signing players who have a big future ahead of them in the game and should suit kind of any modern manager. That's not to say that Spurs are, you know, preparing for life after Postecoglou or anything, but it kind of feels to me as well like another upside of the transfer business is that you sort of, when you make these kind of signings, you sort of future-proof yourself against a managerial change, which, let's face it, you know, will happen eventually. We don't know, you know, might happen after 5 years when he's won three league titles, but eventually he's going to leave the club. And a lot of these players will presumably still be here given how young they are and how long their contracts are. And I think most managers at the kind of cutting edge of coaching would think, yes, they can press, they're technically good, I want to work with them. So that's a good thing.
I mean, I really agree with that. I mean, I've just been, if you look at the kind of coaches that Spurs might go for after Postecoglou, you might think, I don't know, someone like Andoni Iraola, for example, you know, he could come in and work with these players that Postecoglou has got. You know, I mean, I think both things are true. You know, they've signed Postecoglou players, but essentially these are just kind of modern football players. You know, they're young, they're versatile, they're fast, you know, they're able to play high pressing football. And that will suit suit Ange 100%, but it will also suit the kind of coach you assume they'll go for after Ange as well.
Yeah, okay. Well, I take my point back then that it's Ange or nothing. No, I thought it was Dan that you'd made that point originally. It was Tom B, and I thought it was a good point. And I think it's clear that obviously the club have the backing of Ange, and there's absolutely no point in speculating over the manager's future at this stage, as Tom B. No, Tom A just said, get my Tom's muddled up. It's nonsensical. But I'll go back finally to the question I put to Dan during the reaction pod yesterday. I just fear that this club is fundamentally flawed in terms of the way we defend with such a high line. And I don't think any Spurs fan worth his weight in gold knew that Newcastle were going to score at least one goal in the way that they did yesterday. It was all the more painful because, you know, the stat we now know, in two away games this season, Spurs have had 35 attempts on goal. If we don't put away these chances, it is a fundamentally flawed system. And of course, the manager's going to come in for stick. But the point I made, it was a clumsy question to Tommy. I just feel that really, maybe it's very naive, but I do hope that everybody gets behind this team and the manager for now and appreciates that because of the high line, we will concede goals. Our brilliant central defenders in Romero and obviously not Van de Ven yesterday, but Dragosin, who came in and did really well, they could look world beaters in a team that plays a more conservative defensive system. And I think they're fantastic because they do get exposed. It can work. We have just got to find a way to create our opportunities. And, you know, I'll go back to the final point. I just hope that we are trusting our scouting system because we need players who can convert. If they can't, then it's hopeless. And that's my prognosis. Has anyone else got anything to say off the back of that?
I just want to say, you know, objectively, looking at the performances so far, there's been a lot to be encouraged about. Some of the football's been fantastic. I was at the Leicester game. I know how frustrating that was, and they were kind of lucky maybe they didn't lose it in the end. But when it was good in that first half, it was very, very good. And it was, you know, from a neutral's point of view, a joy to watch. And they are carving out loads of chances. The old cliche, you know, for a striker, it's better to have chances and miss them, not get them at all. And that's never a problem with Tottenham. The flip side to that is, when you looked at how Newcastle played in that particular game, they knew they had an issue at centre-back with Dan Burn and Kraft, so the midfield played a lot deeper than they normally do. And Newcastle changed how they normally play, and it won them the game. They were lucky. Spurs probably should have won it, or at least got a point out of it off on the balance of play. So I guess if you're playing the odds over the long, you know, over the season, that won't keep happening. You can't put in those kind of performances and expect to always get results. But the point is that there was a bit of flexibility tactically shown by Howe, which we just haven't really seen enough of from Ange, apart from in that Man City game, which we've talked about in the lead up to this season, that we hope perhaps at times he'll employ it a little bit more. And even more so when you see them lose the game by being cut open in such a way that we've seen so many times before. But overall, As a neutral, I'm still very positive about it. So it's August, it's long season ahead, and the way they're playing when they're playing well from an attacking point of view, I'm very sure they're going to score a lot of goals, and it could, you know, it's going to be exciting. It's just whether the point is whether they're going to be good enough to kick on. I mean, I think kicking on for them is going to be finishing in the top four. I think they've got a good chance. But if you're expecting them to win the league or win a trophy, a bit different, I guess, in the cup competitions, then it's going to be hard because of the level of competition and the fact that they're not going to, I just don't think they'll be consistent enough. But there's a lot to be positive about. I don't think we should be too down on it. It's way too early for that.
That feels like a positive note, and I was going to bring up a negative, which I don't want to end on. But I think it's kind of remiss on the transfer pod not to say, we've talked about number six and wing, which are both areas where Spurs have actually signed someone. We should maybe talk about the areas where they didn't sign someone. And I've got to say, I do fear for Spurs if Vicario or Udogie gets an injury, because who would come in goal? I don't know. Brandon Austin, who's never made a competitive appearance, or Fraser Foster, who's 36 and doesn't look like he could play the kind of Ange way. That's a concern. And at left back, it looks like Spence is the understudy for Udogie, and we don't know a huge amount about Spence at this level, and he's a right back anyway. So I think I was pretty surprised that Spurs didn't go into the market in both or one of those positions. And said on Friday that he didn't want to block the progress of Ashley Phillips, who's gone out on loan to Stoke, and Luka Vucevic, who's coming in 2025. He's a 17-year-old Croatian centre-half. He's, I think, on loan in Belgium at the moment. So, you know, that again just seems to me to all point to a club that's kind of building for the medium term, not for the, you know, necessarily for the here and now.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I think on the left back role, if the worst happens with Udogie, then we saw it, you know, it was suggested as well at the end of last season, you can play Van de Ven at left back, can't you? And Dragosin's looking good enough to come in and slot alongside Romero. So there is some sort of backup there. I agree with the goalkeeper. Put him in cotton wool, because if he gets injured, 78-year-old Fraser Forster, who, you know, he's done well when he's come in the past, but yeah, he's not a natural fit to that Postecoglou system. Then again, that passing out from the back. Don't get me started on that again. All right, that was a negative, Dan. We can't end on a negative. I'm going back to what Tom B said. I think that the future offers a lot. Tom A, thank you. Tom B, thank you. Danny Boy, and any other negatives you want to throw in just at the end of this pod?
No, I think I'm all done. I mean, I did that. We could have a very quick look ahead to January. I don't know if anyone has any thoughts on barring Yang arriving. I'm not sure if anyone has any thoughts on what might happen.
I mean, it's only September the 1st. We can't start thinking about January the 1st now, can we? Left back and a goalkeeper.
There you go. Fine. Done.
Done. There we go. Yeah, that was like going to the Tottenham boardroom. What are we going to do in January? Left back and a goalkeeper. That's it. And make sure they come from the Championship. All right, guys. Thanks very much. I think we're all confident. It may sound like it was a bit of an up and down podcast in terms of the emotions, but it is. Well, it's September now. It's not August anymore. There are no excuses. But there's an international break. We don't have to worry about this weekend. Oh, and then it's only Arsenal the week after that. Keep believing, everybody. I'm Marcus Buckland. Come on, you Spurs.